The Plaza. Marcus Westbrook worked on the fourth floor of the tall building on First Street, the concrete and glass tower that had gone up in the 60s as a bank and become the city hall. And on the last Saturday of May, he stood two blocks from his own desk in a crowd of more than 1,000 people and felt, for one clean stretch of the afternoon, that the two halves of his life had finally come to the same corner. He was 42. He had spent his 20s knocking on doors for a housing group in the near downtown blocks his family had lived in for 100 years, and he had spent his 30s learning how the city worked from the inside, how an ordinance got written, whose call got returned, and he had taken the aide's job because his mother told him the street could shout all it wanted, but somebody had to be in the room when the shouting stopped. Now the street had come downtown by the thousands, masked against the sickness that had shut the world down that spring, holding their signs up in the wind, and it was the largest thing of its kind the town had ever seen, and it was, that afternoon, entirely peaceful. He knew the history nobody around him was carrying. His great-great-grandmother, Sarah Hamilton, had given the ground for the little church on Bell Street when this was a railroad town that would rent a black family a house in only a few blocks and no others. His great-grandmother had been baptized in it. His grandmother's people had platted a settlement north of town in the 40s because the banks downtown would not lend below a certain color and had fought the county for a decade just to get water piped up to it. His Uncle Walter had come home from the war a cook and found the casino floors would hire him to feed white men, but not to stand among them, until the first house in town opened its doors to everybody in 1952 and hired him on opening week. Marcus carried all of that up to the fourth floor every morning in a building most of the people marching had never been inside. He stood in the crowd and thought, "We have been asking this town the same question since before it was a town, and here at last were enough voices to make the question fill a street." It went wrong after dark. He had gone home by then, and he watched the rest of it on his phone the way the whole town did. The daylight crowd thinned to a few hundred and then to a hard core of 100. And among them people he did not know and had never seen. At a single meeting broke the glass doors of the building where he worked and went inside. They threw the furniture out. They set a small fire in the council chamber, the room where he had sat through 100 dull hours of zoning and budget. And they carried a state flag out into the street and burned it. And they broke the windows of the police headquarters and pried open a cash machine. And by full dark, the mayor had declared a curfew and an emergency. And the governor had called out the guard, and there was gas in the air on Virginia Street, and the news trucks had their lights up. Marcus sat on his couch with the phone in his hand and felt something in his chest go cold and small, because he knew exactly what the morning would do with it. The morning would not show the 1,000 who had marched clean in the sun. The morning would show the fire. He barely slept. He was at his desk before dawn on Sunday, not because anyone had called him, but because he could not stand to be anywhere else. And he walked the fourth floor and looked down through the smoke-smeared glass at the plaza below, where the daytime crowd had gathered, empty now and littered, and he made himself a list. That was the thing his mother had taught him, and her grandmother had taught her. When the fire came, you did not stand in the ashes and grieve. You wrote the list. He called the people he actually knew, the church women and the union people, and the students, and the tired old officers of the local branch of the association his great-uncle had belonged to, and he did not talk about the broken glass at all. He talked about the next thing. He talked about what 100 people carrying candles could say that a broken window could never say, and how the only answer to being called a mob was to be, in public and on purpose, and in front of every camera in the valley, unmistakably, not one. They gathered again the following Sunday in the same plaza in the daylight. The high school kids had done most of the organizing, and Marcus let them, and stayed at the back where an aide belonged, and watched. There were hundreds of them, and not one broke anything. They said the names, the man in Minneapolis under the knee, the woman in Louisville shot in her own hallway, the boy from their own county the police had killed the winter before, and between the names they stood in a silence so complete that Marcus could hear the river going by behind the buildings, the same river his family had lived beside for 5 generations. While the town decided, slowly, grudgingly, decade by decade, to let them all the way in. He looked at the young ones running it, their masks pulled up over their faces, their voices steady, and he thought that not one of them knew Sarah Hamilton's name or would ever need to. They were doing what she had done. They were standing on the town's own ground and refusing to be told they did not belong on it. A woman near the front turned and found his face in the crowd and lifted her hand to him, one of the church women he had called in the dark, and he lifted his back. Then a girl at the microphone, 17 at the most, asked everyone who could to kneel, and the whole plaza went down together onto the concrete in the sun. Hundreds of them, Marcus among them, down on the ground of the town at the foot of the building where he worked. And he put his knee on the warm stone and bowed his head and did not think about the morning's paper at all, because for once the picture the cameras were taking was the true one, and it would keep. Historical note. On May 30th, 2020, more than 1,000 people marched peacefully in downtown Reno in the wave of protests following the killing of George Floyd. After dark, a small group broke into and set a fire inside Reno City Hall at 1 East 1st Street, a 1963 tower originally built as a bank, damaged the police headquarters, and prompted Mayor Hillary Scheeve to declare a curfew and emergency and Governor Steve Sisolak to activate the National Guard. Organizers of the daytime march condemned the destruction, and the following days and weeks saw sustained peaceful vigils and marches, including a June 7th peace vigil in the downtown plaza, led largely by local black organizers and students who mourned George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and Misha Lee, a local teenager killed by police that winter.